Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello and welcome to episode 283 of Geek Town Radio. I'm back this week with Gray. How are you doing?
Hello.
How are you doing?
I'm good. Thank you for having me back on, Dave.
You're very, very welcome. It's nice to have you back on. So it's been a few weeks. What have you been watching?
Well, I've been trying to balance my month a little bit and trying to watch new films and trying to watch lots of TV. And I'm here for a big discussion today about one of my favourite programmes of the year so far. And we're only on February. So
yes.
Let's talk about some films. So I decided to start looking for some sort of newer release films to try and see what's out there in the current mode of all the films going straight to streaming or Netflix-based films. Two I watched this month would be Like a Boss and Stage Mother. Out of the two, Stage Mother was probably the better one. Like a Boss is sort of like a female-led rom-com, but there's actually no rom, so it's all like a female-led comedy. It's about girl pals who own a business and then they sell themselves to a bigger sort of business to try and you sort of make themselves a bit further. It wasn't funny. Tiffany Haddish, she's the best name in it, in my opinion, in terms of humour. But I got lost. It's one of those films where I was watching it and then found myself on my phone and then found myself looking for a magazine. And then I was like, okay, this is not good. But, you know, I persevered. I'm strong in that sense. Stage Mother, a lot more compelling. It tells the story of a mother who loses her son and her son owns a drag bar in San Francisco.
Right.
And they sort of, it happens in the beginning. It's not a spoiler. So he dies like in the opening act and they had sort of repelled him from the family because of his choices. And she goes down and it's a really lovely film. It's not going to take home any awards. It's got Jackie Weaver in it and Lucy Liu. It's just lovely and sweet. And she basically starts affecting all the lives of the people that were around her son. Mm. And they all dislike her for disowning him and said that he was lost without her. But she sort of like tries to bring their better sides out of them. And I tell you what, Lucy Liu comes across really well. Completely different way of seeing her. We've seen her for the last 9-10 years in elementary in a very straightforward role. And this sees her in a very different light. So out of those two films I watched, Stage Mother, I watched a few other ones from way back, but I thought I'd focus on those two.
Cool.
For TV, finished lots of series that were sort of on my backlog and also started in January. I finished Staged 2, finished that in a day. Absolutely
yeah.
loved it.
It was brilliant. Yeah.
I mean, you know, I always worry the difficult second season.
Yeah.
But they did so well with it. Like the whole concept, some of those names that came in, I genuinely found the Phoebe Waller-Bridge and Cate Blanchett episode so funny. Just with
it's
the
so
whole,
thrilling.
Lovely to meet you again. I don't know. And it was just idea of that. And you always, you know, absolutely love that. History of Swear Words, it was okay. They used Nicolas Cage. He probably spent an hour filming the bits he was
in. Probably. I rather liked that series. I quite enjoyed it because it is genuinely quite informative and interesting. And Nicolas Cage is the perfect person to kind of draw an audience into it. But there is a lot of discussion with people that do analyse the etymology of swear words. And so it works really well. And it's quite interesting to know where these things come from and why, you know, this particular word is seen as a swear word and other things might not be. I really quite enjoyed that show. It is quite interesting. Nicolas Cage is just kind of fun, just tying the bits together, you know.
Yeah.
It's good.
I'd love to see if they go on to another season because there's loads they could do with that about swears in different cultures. And I think it would be really if they go on to like body movements or the way you can swear without realizing you're doing it. If they do, that'd be great. But I'm not sure if it was just a one-off. Absolutely loved it. Binged it in about a weekend. Mm. I also caught Moonbase 8, probably a late release in December, I'm imagining, Dave. I'm not sure.
Yes, it was. Yeah.
It was all right. I wasn't wasn't laugh out loud. It wasn't.
No.
I just liked it.
Until I saw it on this list, I'd kind of forgotten I hadn't watched the rest of it. Yeah. I'd actually recorded it and my Skybox died and I had to get a new one. And it was one of those that I forgot to put back on. And it wasn't until I saw this, I thought, oh yeah, I didn't watch that. Do I want to watch the rest of it? I mean, it's still kicking around, I think, on streaming. So, you know, I could go and catch up with it. But yeah, I know what you mean. It was okay. I have a feeling it should have been kind of better given the cast that were involved. Yeah. So
I kept having comparisons to like Avenue 5 and like Space Force and like all these things about space and the humorous 30 minute or 25 minute episodes. And, you know, it was harmless in my mind, but I wouldn't be writing home about it.
Yeah.
One thing I would be writing home about, there's the next one. BBC iPlayer's Industry, obviously released last autumn. Finally finished it in January. What an amazing episode. It was such good drama, really harsh look at like investment banking and finance in London and these grads that are trying to get into proper jobs. And oh, it was so good. And again, I just don't know where BBC are getting their acquisitions from at the moment, because I absolutely loved that. Whoever commissioned that, really good. I'd recommend that. It probably would have been a 2020 recommendation now, but I'm a little bit late to the party.
Yeah, I've watched the first episode of it and then thought, oh, this was interesting, and haven't gone back to it yet. And I do need to go back to it. It was a co-production with BBC and HBO, I seem to remember. It's a Bad Wolf production as well.
Fantastic. Absolutely fantastic. Finally finished For Life, and then I got myself all confused on IMDb and realised that the second season was already airing, because I was like, I started reading like the some of the synopsis. So that was the Sky Witness drama, and I struggled with it a little bit, seeing where they could go with it. And now I've seen the final episode, I am quite excited for season two and how about they develop his character a little bit further. So really, really good. I know we spoke about that way back in autumn, but finally,
yeah, I am enjoying that. There was one episode that kind of drowned it to a halt for me, which was, there is an episode where they go back in time and show him being arrested. It's about four or five episodes in, and I really trudges that episode and takes you completely out. It's sort of a bottle thing that takes you out of the main story, and I kind of stopped watching a bit, and it took me forever to get through that episode, and then it picks up again. For some reason, I really struggled with that episode particularly. I'm still watching through the first season. It's one of those ones that I'm going back to every so often, but yeah, it's good. I'm enjoying that show.
And then I finished, literally 2 days ago, I finished the second season of Back, which is the David Mitchell and Robert Webb sitcom that was dropped on Channel 4. I liked it. Episodes 1 and 2, I couldn't get into. But by the time we sort of hit episode 3 or 4 and I could get a spin of where all these sub storylines were going, I sort of enjoyed it a little bit more. I think it had been such a long time since season one. Maybe that was it. And then I started thinking, should I go and watch season one and then lead into season two? But yeah, by the time I got to season 4, 5 and 6, really enjoyed them. Like where they're going with that. Not sure if it'd be commissioned for a third season. Got a great ensemble cast and just a nice little sitcom that Channel 4 dropped.
Yes.
So that's another thing I finished. But obviously, Dave, the big discussion I want to talk about today is I have completed It's a Sin, the Russell T Davies drama on Channel 4. I know you mentioned it last week, but I finished all 5 in a weekend and it's had such a profound impact on me. And
yeah.
I just want to say, have you finished it as we speak now?
Yes, I have finished it. We are going to talk about It's a Sin. There are going to be spoilers in this section. It's going to be about 10 minutes, 30 seconds long. So if you want to skip past the spoilers about It's a Sin, jump forward about 10 minutes and 30 seconds. I'm just going to put a spoiler warning out because we are going to put spoilers in this. Yes, warning.
Spoilers.
So there may be spoilers in this bit. Just be warned if you're not finished watching It's a Sin and skip forward a little bit. But we are going to talk about it now. So, thoughts?
I love the drama. I love the performances. But I've never actually been this emotionally affected by a show since, and this is my quote, since the episode of ER back in the sort of early noughties when Dr. Green died. This has such a profound effect on me because the story they were telling, sort of, I couldn't directly relate to. I didn't grow up in that time. I was born in 1983, so I grew up in the 90s as a young person and sort of understanding what was going on in the world. But by the time we get to like episodes 4 and 5, where it's closer to that period of time where I had that awareness and I have the awareness of the media and the what they put out, it started having a real profound effect on me. The way Russell T. Davies has told this story is just so beautifully put together. He has such a lovely mix of characters. He has cast them amazingly. I mean, you cannot fault his casting.
No.
Even down to Keely Hawes as the mum. I mean, in episode 4 and 5, you dislike her so much, but you love her so much for the character she is portraying in terms of her acting credentials. For a show to spin in Neil Patrick Harris, Stephen Fry, Tracy Ann Oldman, all these brilliant names, and they're not the names. The names are these five stunning young actors who all have their beautiful sort of woven storylines that tell different angles and views from this whole epidemic. And I was just blown away. I was hooked. And as much as I would have loved to watch that weekly, I couldn't. It just drove me onto the next episode, onto the next episode. And then by the time I watched episode 5, it really brought something home in me. And I don't know what happened. And I was a bawling wreck. And the big thing for me and the huge element of the final episode was how Russell T. Davies portrayed the sense of shame and the shame that these men felt because of how families were almost told to feel. And that brought it home for me. And there's a history of shame in the LGBT culture, which, you know, we're in modern times that they're really trying to push and change. But there are still things that I look back on and that I felt shame about. And although I wasn't that person in the 80s and I couldn't have been part of that culture, you still feel it now. So that's why I hit a personal tone. And it is affecting so much of the LGBT community, but also the non-LGBT community, for understanding what was going on at that time and to see some beautiful stories on social media of parents talking to their children or their young adult children now, or trying to get across their understanding of how they dealt with it in their own way at the time, has been a real revelation in my mind of learning more and understanding more. And yeah, I can't say it will take a lot if another TV program comes and takes this off of number one spot. And I'm saying that on February, what's going out on February the 2nd. I'm saying that a lot, you know, and I'm watching WandaVision as well, like you. But in my mind, It's a Sin is up there for me for the beautiful storytelling, for touching a place in my heart and bringing to life these five amazing young actors who I hope will go very far.
Yeah, I would absolutely agree with you on all of that. I think I said last week, I think it's the best thing that Russell T. Davies has ever written. It's a spectacular piece of writing. The casting is phenomenal. The older actors, yes, they're great, but those five young relative unknowns, I mean, Ollie Alexander has name recognition, but not so much as an actor, as a singer. Lydia West was in Years and Years, but you know, those are the only things she's really been in that were sort of major roles, I believe. And the others were relative unknowns. So given that little group, just spectacularly work well together. It's incredible performances from all of them. Historically, very interesting just to watch through it and how it was handled generally. But the stuff inside the families, Keely Hawes, you mentioned, particularly the final episode when she's in the hospital and she's suddenly discovered that Richie is dying from this illness, which she didn't even realize he was gay or the fact that he had this illness in the first place. Just her tearing through that hospital and the range of emotions, which flips from her being angry to upset to not understanding to wanting to hit somebody, to it's incredible how you can see every single tiny emotion just bubbling and something pops out and then it kind of slots back in again, and then she's having a sort of slightly more calm discussion, and then, you know, she's attacking her husband, and then it's just a phenomenal performance. And then that final meeting between her and Jill, when she says he died yesterday, that was the bit that really got me. Your stomach just drops, and she's there saying, I didn't handle this well, I realize that now. But
and I'm
still
so glad she didn't get redemption. That's some mistake some dramas do, and they sort of redeem her, and you could have had Jill hug her and say it's fine. But you know, that was such a good decision by Russell T. Davies.
Yeah, it was really the right way to play it, because it would have been wrong of Jill to let her off the hook for that. That was a superb performance. I loved the opening episode as well with Neil Patrick Harris and his character, the way it wanders through the ages of things move forward slightly and how people are dealing with it as various different stages. There's this disease spreads and grows. There's an interesting moment as well with Richie, Ollie Alexander's character, where he sat in bed and going, I killed people as well.
Yeah, which absolutely.
Was an interesting thing to put in because, yeah, there were people out there that did do that, you know, that were so in denial about this illness that they were just carrying on as if they didn't have it. There's a lot of characters in this that nobody is kind of held up as being absolutely perfect. Yeah. You know, obviously there's the mother who you can see why she's struggling dealing with it, but, you know, handles it in all the wrong ways, with the exception possibly of Jill. But even then, there were moments when Jill is dealing, when the virus is first identified.
Yeah, with Glenn,
With Glenn, and she's kind of going home and scrubbing her hands, kind of handling everything with gloves. And I mean, that was the other moment early on as well, when you saw people die and they just take everything and just burn everything. Yeah. I feel like, wow. There are so many moments in that show that are just really bring to focus what happens when you don't give people information, the conspiracy theory things, which, I mean, it's bizarre how well this fits because this was obviously all written prior to us actually having a pandemic right now. And a lot of the stuff that Richie was coming out with talking about the conspiracy theories and the denialism and stuff is very much the sort of things that you hear about COVID these days. But this was obviously written and filmed before that. So it's interesting watching it through those eyes as well.
This is definitely one of Russell T. Davies's best pieces of work. And I know a lot of people are talking about someone who's come out in the recent years with something like Years and Years, which was a fantastic piece of work, which really played on negativity around the media and what the world could become like. This, he again goes to a slightly different subject matter and brings out just another beautiful portrayal. And a lot of people are saying, oh, is there going to be a second series? Like they do with things like this. And I'm here saying, please do not do a second series. Keep it in the memory of what it is and keep it there. Keep it, that is perfection in five episodes.
Yeah.
If you're going to do something else that moves us on, then let's move on. Let's continue educating, but let's move on in a different way, in a different style. I would hate to dilute the power of those five episodes any further by, you know, wouldn't have the same impact in my mind than these five episodes would have with those characters and follows those characters. There's part of me that would absolutely cringe if they did like a, you know, 20 years later and we meet Jill growing. No. Let's just focus on the power of that message that he did over those five date points across that time. I just think that would be ideal. So I would say, please, Russell, just say this is it for It's a Sin. It is an entirety, like some of the most fantastic TV programs we've had in the last 20 years that do their one series and go, you know what? One is enough. Like Watchmen, one is enough.
Yeah.
You know, we're not going to dilute it any further. We've told our message. We want it to stay like that.
It's something that Russell does very well when he takes a particular idea and builds a narrative around focusing on one particular thing. You know, as you say, with something like Years and Years, It's a Sin does it. He did a show which was brilliant as well, actually, a number of years ago called The Second Coming, which was based around the idea of the return of Christ in modern day with Christopher
Leslie Sharp.
Christopher Eccleston was the main star of that. Yes, it was Leslie Sharp as well.
Leslie Sharp, yeah. Fantastic, yeah.
That was absolutely superb as well. And, you know, focusing obviously on religion and people's reactions to the idea that the Son of God turns up again. And he's a phenomenal little mini series. And when he does those little things, which are like 2-5 episodes, he's on fire with a lot of that stuff. But this one is just phenomenal. Completely there with you. This certainly is going to take some beating for best limited series of the year, I think. A phenomenal piece of work.
And thank you so much for having me on this week to talk about it. I know I reached out to you in the week to say I would. And And, you know, and any Geek Town listeners out there, if you want to talk about this more or any of those subjects do hit home, just reach out to me, go onto my Twitter, and absolutely, I'm here to sort of talk about it as well. So, yeah, thank you for talking about that.
I really wanted to talk about it with somebody that had watched it. And, you know, I know you had a very deep reaction to it, and I'm not as connected to the subject matter maybe as maybe you are, but it's still an absolutely phenomenal piece of work. Just having lived through that period of time, it's really interesting seeing it, you know, and seeing it from that point of view as well. Just phenomenal. It's a Sin is all available to stream on All4 right now, and if you haven't seen it, go and watch it. It is a phenomenal piece of TV. So outside of that,
back to what you're watching, Dave.
Back to the stuff I'm watching. WandaVision, which you did sort of briefly mention in there, we finally got some answers in the fourth episode, which is great. And, you know, we're coming up to the sort of halfway point. I really, really like what they did with the episode this week. I thought that was really good. You know, you got to see things from the outside and what had been going on. You're getting sort of a bit more of an idea of what the situation is and how things piece together. So there's a lot of talk of people just wanting them to do a TV show, which is just a sort of weird cases with Jimmy Woo and the FBI agent. It would be brilliant. Jimmy Woo, Randall Park is amazing in that role. And he was the parole officer from Ant-Man, if you want to try and place which movie you saw him before.
Also one of the few that has that DC Marvel crossover. I think I read somewhere there's very few actors who have ongoing characters across DC and WandaVision, because he was also in Aquaman, and there's a chance that he can come back if Aquaman comes onto a second film. So they were like saying very few actors have got that, and he's one of them.
I would love, though, the idea of him doing a series which is almost a bit like a kind of Men in Black thing, where there's lots of weirdness going on around him, but it kind of washes over him, you know. That would be really good. And you could keep Darcy in there as well, because I mean Kat Dennings is brilliant in that role, and she's always really, really funny, just wonderful as the astrophysicist. And I would like to see, you know, maybe a little team of them, maybe Monica and Jimmy and Darcy all together would be really quite a good little team. You could create a great little TV show of that, and it could be quite fun. A sword TV show with those guys, I would love. That would be great.
I hope it keeps getting better. One of my friends was like, oh, I just wish episode 4 was episode 1. It would have made a lot more sense. So I was like, that would have just been too boring for us Marvel fans. We want that intrigue. We want those questions. We want to be able to piece things together. Leave it as it is.
Totally. I think, I think last week, I hope they don't drag this out with the weirdness and you not finding out answers until the last couple of episodes. And they didn't, you know, literally the next episode along actually gave you some answers, which is great. So I'm loving WandaVision. I think they're doing a wonderful job with it. It was a little bit annoying in those first few episodes that you weren't finding things out, but now this episode dropped, I can see it really start steaming along. So really looking forward to the rest of that. Still working my way through Vikings, midway through season 5, I think, right now. So I'm enjoying that. My watching has slightly slowed down because of everything else that's been on, because there's a load of new things. I've seen the first couple of episodes of Batwoman, which I'm not going to talk about. The reason I've seen that is because I have access to a press portal from DC. So I know it's not on British TV at the moment. I just was curious to see how the new character, Ryan, is working out. And I think they handle it pretty well, you know, because obviously they lost their lead with Ruby Rose deciding to leave the show. I think the transition actually works pretty well. I'm really interested to see where they take it for the second season, moving it forward. It's good. I'm enjoying it. I think it's actually working pretty solidly. So from what I've seen in the opening couple of episodes. So I'd be interested to watch a bit more of that, but I'm not going to talk too much about that because, you know, obviously it's not aired over here. Resident Alien, I watched, which is the Alan Tudyk show. It's Alan Tudyk being wonderfully strange in most of it. It's basically there's an alien crash lands on Earth, finds himself in this little town in the middle of nowhere. He plans with never to actually stop on Earth. He was actually flying over and was supposed to deliver a, in quotes, package onto Earth and fly off again. And then he gets hit by a storm. His craft crashes. So he finds himself stuck in this little town. He ends up becoming the town Time Doctor, not really entirely understanding the human culture because he's never really kind of been, he had no intention of ever interacting with humans if he could help it. He was staying in a cabin miles away. I've only seen the opening episode of it at the moment, but I would watch Alan Tudyk paint walls. So, you know, he's hilariously funny and really enjoyable. It's the perfect sort of vehicle for him. And I'm really looking forward to watching some more of that. So that was great. So in the first couple of episodes of Dead Pixels, which is a wonderfully fun show, as somebody who is a gamer and who has spent many, many, many hours messing around on those sort of big MMORPG games, I understand a lot of what they're talking about in this and the obsessions with kind of grinding things up, and got an interesting new change with the second season in that the game has been altered and has somewhat been like kiddified by adding things like Fortnite hats and loot boxes and that sort of stuff. So there's a lots of kind of things that they really don't agree with, and it's sort of wrecked their beloved game. That's been quite fun to watch, and I'm really enjoying that. There are a couple of interviews up on the website for the cast of that. And Snowpiercer came back for its second season. Again, really solid opening episode. You get to see Sean Bean finally as the fabled creator of Snowpiercer. We heard his voice a couple of times. They've been setting that up since series one, but we actually get to see him now, which is good. We'll see whether he survives until the end of the season, because with it Sean Bean's involved, that's never a guarantee.
I was going to say, is this going to be a long series for Sean?
So I don't know. I honestly don't know whether he's going to survive after this entire season, because he has been basically set up as the big bad for this season. We'll see what happens. But again, solid return for that. It's one of those things that's taken it beyond the original source material, but done a very good job of taking it on beyond the original source. They made changes that allowed them to move it forward. I'm all for that. I think if you can do that well and there is enough legs to it, then I think what they did with it at the end of season one and the start of season two, I think they're doing a really interesting job. Very much enjoying that, and that's on Netflix if you want to go and catch that. That's all the stuff we've been doing this week. Let's move on to some TV and film news.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
We kick off the TV and film news with renewals, cancellations and pickups. We start off with some cancellations. Trickster, which ran on Sci-Fi UK, it's a Canadian series, cancelled after one season, not because of bad numbers, which is usually the reason things get cancelled after one season. The show has an Indigenous Canadian character as the lead and is sort of a major part of the show. The creator, Michelle Latimer, had claimed Indigenous Canadian heritage, and it turns out she isn't. And that rather threw a cat among the pigeons for the production staff and led to a number of people that were working on the show leaving, who were Indigenous Canadians, leaving the series. It's not entirely clear whether that was sort of intentional. It sounds like it was something she'd been told by her grandfather and she'd always run with it without ever actually properly checking. And when they did actually properly check, it seems to not be true. So, yeah. Yeah, it caused a few ructions in the production, and it was originally renewed for a second season, but they've now opted not to move forward with it because of all the controversy surrounding it, which is unfortunate, but I can kind of understand why. Shrill, which is a comedy from Hulu, which has been airing on BBC Three over here. The first two seasons are out. They're saying it's going to end after its third season, so that won't be back. And On My Block, which is a Netflix series, that has been renewed for a fourth but final season as well. Over on the renewals side, Blacklist renewed for season 9, which is incredibly early renewal for that.
Yeah.
That's also returning very soon in the UK as well, which is never usually back this early. So, of course, I think part of that is because it's an NBC show and we are starting to get some of the NBC stuff a lot earlier than we would have previously because of their connection to Comcast and the fact that Comcast now own Sky. So I think that's shifted things up a little bit. That's been renewed for a 9th season, which I'm quite happy about because I do enjoy that show. Although I am wondering when they're going to stop it, because there is only so far you can kind of take that story, surely. But yeah, they've kept it going. So season 9 of that. Too Hot to Handle, which is an American dating show. It's produced by Fremantle. The concept of the show is that the contestants aren't allowed any sexual contact for the 4 weeks that they're together.
Oh, I do remember hearing that, yeah.
Yes, so that's the sort of idea behind it. But they've apparently renewed it for 2 more seasons, that one. So, I mean, if you're into that sort of thing, then it's there. Lupin, which is the French drama which has been airing on Netflix internationally, is going to return for part 2. I think that's 5 more episodes. That's returning in summer 2021, so summer later this year. Estimated to have been seen by 70 million households since its launch earlier this month.
I'm getting so lost with these who keep breaking the records, because this week, did we learn it was Bridgerton has just taken over from Queen's Gambit or something like that? The next month, another series sort of gets a new record. And
it's crazy. They've just ridiculous numbers that some of these shows are landing. But I mean, that's got to be their largest foreign language drama, because, I mean, 70 million households for a French language drama is quite incredible. So I haven't actually watched any of it yet. It does look quite good. It's the idea of a guy who takes inspiration from a historical kind of thief and master of disguise to take revenge on some people that wronged him. It looks like it's quite good. So I will go and try and watch a few episodes of that and see what it's like. But it seems to have gone down incredibly well. On to pickups. All 5 seasons of Bates Motel are coming to BBC iPlayer. I don't know, have you watched any of that?
Watched them all.
Yeah.
Really good, really good. I mean, now it's coming to iPlayer, I'd be tempted to watch them again. Just so, like, Vera Farmiga is brilliant in it. Like, if anyone knows Vera Farmiga, she plays the mother.
Right.
And it's a modernized version of Psycho. So they take it to the modern day, and they have the actor who's currently in The Good Doctor.
Freddie Highmore.
Freddie Highmore plays Norman, and his mum is played by Vera Farmiga. There's some great other cast members that pop up across the series as different characters. It's very dark. Go watch it if you are into those sort of things, like a bit of light. It does it really well. Plays honour to Alfred Hitchcock really well, and I enjoyed it.
Yeah, I didn't see it when it was out originally, because it has previously aired in the UK. I like the fact that BBC are picking up these older box sets and just putting them out there onto iPlayer. I think it's a really smart strategy by them just to pick up things that gets them to a wider audience and gets them out there for free. I mean, you know, because a lot of this stuff has already been on Sky, so it's going to be relatively cheap for them to pick this sort of stuff up. And, you know, if it gets a younger audience using iPlayer a bit more, then great. And that sort of seems to be the purpose of it. They're picking up nice, interesting dramas, which if they've aired somewhere before, and some of them have been originals as well, you know, they have picked up a few things which haven't aired anywhere else. I don't think there's anything wrong with them picking up a few imports and, you know, interesting stuff like this to bring onto it. I think that's great. Wanted to just mention the Snyder Cut of the Justice League. You may have been hearing dates floating around of the March 18th, which is when it's landing in the US and some other selected territories that have HBO and HBO Max. Not in the UK at the moment. It doesn't appear that Sky, at least right now, have it either, which I would have thought would be the most obvious place to pick it up, because they run all the other HBO stuff, and they've mainly been the people running the HBO Max series. It's going to be released as 4 individual kind of episodes, so it's sort of been, I don't know whether they're releasing them together, but it's going to be releasing 4 parts, basically. So it may be it's essentially a 4-part movie is what they've done with it. Interestingly, there is a service called Wonderland at Home. It's like a sort of meal box service, but they're doing a DC themed meal box. You know, Big Belly Burgers, which are the sort of burger for the DC. It's like their version of McDonald's or Burger King or whatever. They're doing like a Big Belly Burger box that you can buy it and then like put it together, you know, cook it at home. It's one of those sort of things. I think they've got a DC themed restaurant opening in London. They announced as part of this in the initial announcement, they did say that meal box thing is coming in April, May, and the UK are getting the meal box. And that's supposed to be so you can order the meal box, cook it, and have a sort of Justice League themed night, which suggests that it is going to be released somewhere in the UK if they're doing that in April and May. I would hope that there is a UK release date incoming. We just haven't been told what it is yet.
It'll just be so late. We're going to be very frustrated by the US on social media.
Yeah, I hope that what they're probably going to do is maybe they're going to release it to buy on all the platforms, which is what they've done with some movies previously. So they might release it so you can get it to buy on Sky and Amazon and Apple and everywhere else. They may do it that way. So it'll cost you like 20 quid and you can buy the thing and that'll be it. I hope that's what they're probably doing. If somebody's not going to get it as part of the package, I mean, it may go directly to somebody like, you know, Netflix. It may go directly to somebody like Amazon. It may eventually come onto Sky, or they may just release it and sell it like they would do if they were releasing a movie at home. We'll have to see, but I do hope that if they are doing that, they announce it before March 18th and release it on March 18th, because otherwise that's going to get pirated to death and it'll be nobody's fault but Warner Brothers. You know, in this day and age, with a movie that big, with a movie that's that anticipated, you cannot mess around with doing staggered releases across the world. You can't do it because people will just go and find it somewhere else. Yeah. If it gets pirated, Warner Brothers, it's entirely your fault. So
you've been told.
Yeah. The other thing that is arriving on Disney Plus, they haven't got an announcement for the Mighty Ducks Game Changers, which is coming on the 26th of March. That is arriving on Disney Plus, which is a sort of follow on to the Mighty Ducks franchise movies. Stars Lauren Graham as a mother of the boy who is in the Mighty Ducks team, but the Mighty Ducks are now this decent, well-regarded professional team, and her son gets cut because he's not good enough, and she forms her own kind of scrappy team with the help of the original Mighty Ducks manager, played by Emilio Estevez, and they go up against the Mighty Ducks. So the Mighty Ducks are the kind of big bad of it, and there is a new sort of underdog team that is the team that you're following. I'm quite looking forward to that. I think that could be quite fun, particularly if you're a fan of the Mighty Ducks movie franchise. Speaking of Disney Plus, they have also announced a full reveal of their lineup for the Star Service, which is this new mature brand that they're adding onto it.
So exciting.
Which is adding stuff on from the 23rd of February is when that's launching. And we're not going to go through the whole list. It's on the website if you want to go and find it. There are tons and tons of shows, of box sets, of other stuff that they are adding on there. What they have said is that Big Sky, which is the big ABC hit show, that is going to be on there. The follow-up to Love, Simon, Love, Victor, that is going to be on there. And the Marvel one-season TV show Hellstrom is going to be on there as well. They'd announced those previously. They've also added Solar Opposites, which is an animated series centers around a family of aliens and their child replicants from the planet Schlorp, who have crashed on Earth and must take refuge in Middle America. They disagree on whether this is awful or awesome. sounds like it could be quite fun and quite silly. But that's a Hulu series. That's an adult animated series, which is why it's on the Star brand and not on the main Disney Plus brand. It basically does sound like anything new that gets released on Hulu that is not like an import, that is owned and made for and by Hulu, will get released directly onto Star internationally by the sounds of it moving forward. So it is going to be worth getting moving up. There are a couple of other things which are UK premieres which are coming on. The Fosters, which is the original series that the BBC iPlayer show Good Trouble was spun out of. The Fosters is finally airing on Star in the UK, and that'll be all five seasons of the original show. So if you're a fan of Good Trouble, then you can now go watch the original thing that was what spawned it, and that will be on Star from the 23rd of February. A couple of more shows, which I need to say thanks to Dave B in the comments that spotted these, because they are technically premieres as well. Raising Hope, which was a show that was on Sky One but was dropped after two seasons, will now be on Star with all four seasons of it. It's a comedy from the makers of My Name is Earl, and charts the chaos an unexpected arrival brings into an already flawed household. That's Raising Hope, and that's going to have all four seasons. So the first two seasons have have aired in the UK, but the second two seasons will now be on Star for the first time. And Terriers, which was a drama that there was a lot of talk about, but only kind of lasted one season. It aired on FX 10 years ago, and he's premiering for the first time now on Star. Follows an ex-cop and recovering alcoholic, played by Donald Logue, who you all know is Bullock from Gotham, who partners with his best friend and former criminal, played by Michael Raymond James, who you'll probably know from Once Upon a Time and also popped up in Prodigal Son as well. And they set up an unlicensed private investigative business together. That looked like it could be quite good. And I know there was a lot of people lamenting the fact that that got canned after one season. So if you want to check that out, that's called Terriers, and that will be on there from launch as well. There are also over 250 movies landing on there, which a whole range of stuff from sort of X-Files, and there's a whole bunch of other things on there.
It's incredible. One thing that I did realise, this is my little own investigating, the day before this got announced, like all these programmes, I went onto Amazon to continue watching an old season of Cougar Town, which I've been watching slowly, and it had gone. I was like, oh, that's frustrating. And then I looked, and loads of Amazon stuff got wiped out on the 18th. It all had to leave Amazon. And yeah, then I realised the next day, all that, I saw half of them in the Star, in the big Star logo that released. And yeah, I was just like, that now makes sense why they all had to leave on a certain date.
Yes. So some people were asking about things like Grey's Anatomy, which apparently is still on Amazon. I would think that it's quite possible that some of that sort of stuff might get moved across, because first 15 seasons of Grey's Anatomy is going to be on Star. It sounds like Sky, at least for the moment, are still going to be premiering it. It's similar to what they do with The Simpsons, by the sounds of it.
Yeah.
So they're a couple of seasons behind on Disney Plus with The Simpsons, but Sky premiere it. It sounds like similar thing going to be happening with Grey's. Blackish is another one as well, where seasons 6 and 7 aren't on Star at the moment. So that may mean that E4 have bought season 6 and just haven't aired it yet, or maybe that they'll come on in due course. So we don't know quite yet. Couple of interesting things that weren't on there. The Orville wasn't on there, which I was quite surprised by, because that's like a Fox and a Hulu show, which is entirely owned or made for Disney. So I was quite surprised that wasn't on there. Legion wasn't on there, the Marvel series. 911 Lone Star wasn't on there, whereas 911 seasons 1 and 2 were. Although, again, I think that may have something to do with the deal that Sky has. It may be that there is a sort of grace period between it airing on Sky and them being able to put it on Star. So I suspect Lone Star will come on at some point in the future if you didn't catch it on Sky or don't have Sky. But yeah, Orville and Legion, which aren't streaming anywhere as far as I can tell, I was surprised that those two weren't in the list. And I would assume that when the new season of The Orville comes out, that will go on there, or they'll air it on Fox UK, because we're not entirely sure how this is going to tally up with Fox UK with some of these shows. So
yeah, we're still waiting for season 3 of The Orville, aren't we? I'm surprised it's not been dropped. Like, the Fox have all had these old commissions, so therefore it maybe suggests that it might be released by Star, but a bit later, like staggered, or...
Yeah, well, I mean, the problem with The Orville has been the shooting because of the pandemic. It was slightly delayed because it was dropped by Fox and moved over onto Hulu when Disney bought it, because it takes a while to film it anyway. They couldn't get it into the autumn schedule. So what Disney said was, okay, well, we'll take it and we'll put it onto Hulu instead. It was always going to be a little bit later. And then the pandemic hit, which completely derailed everything. And they have been having problems because, you know, there's a lot of makeup and stuff on that show. So there's a lot of people in close contact. They've been having issues trying to get it filming again. They were hopefully going to start filming again. So it has been quite majorly delayed, that third season. It is supposed to be still coming and it is supposed to be going out on Hulu. But yeah, it's odd. I don't know whether it's a licensing thing or whether Seth MacFarlane has some sort of control over it internationally, maybe. I honestly don't know. But I thought that was weird that wasn't in there. Mm. Hopefully they'll get add-on in the future. In terms of the pricing, one of the interesting things that was an addition to the pricing, because the price is going up from the 23rd of February, it will be $79.90 as opposed to $59.99, which is what it was previously. So it's going up by £20, which is a fairly substantial leap yearly, or £2 a month, $5.99 to $7.99 if you pay for it monthly. However, if you already have a Disney subscription, they will be honoring the renewal price for 6 months up until the 22nd of August. So basically means if you bought Disney Plus when it first dropped in the UK, you will get your renewal at $59.99, or you will continue to get it at $5.99 if you've been paying monthly. But it means you can get the year renewal for $59.99, which would be the way I would suggest you do it. That's good, because they hadn't announced that until they announced all this stuff this week. It means that you'll get the second year for the same price as the first, which is great. Moving across from Disney to DC, there's been quite a lot of casting announcements this week. The Sandman, which is the Neil Gaiman TV show, that has had a bunch of casting announced for it. Do you know the Sandman comic books? I know there were...
I do not, but I did see all these came up on my social media, so I must have just picked up on my trends, and I saw all the pictures, and it made me want to go and read a little bit more before it does come over here, because, you know, some of the stars that are coming into it, I love them. So
yeah, Sandman is very, very famous and well-respected comic book. It's made by DC. It's not really connected to any of the other superhero-y stuff particularly. Occasionally the characters pop up, but it's not really part of that same universe. It's very much its own sort of thing. It's described as a rich blend of modern myth and dark fantasy, in which contemporary fiction and historical drama and legend are seamlessly interwoven. The series follows the people and places that are affected by Morpheus the Dream King as he mends the cosmic and human mistakes he made during his vast existence. I mean, that doesn't really make it much clearer either, but it's basically the lead character is Morpheus. He's the King of Dreams, or Lord of Dreaming, he's described. He's actually known as Dream more than anything else, but yeah, Dream, Morpheus, Lord of Dreaming, the Dream King, pretty much all these names. He's one of these people a bit like Satan that has a million different types of names. They've cast Tom Sturridge in the lead role as that Tony Award-winning actor. He's been in things like Bittersweet, Velvet Buzzsaw, Hollow Crown, The Boat That Rocked are probably the things that he's best known for. It's one of those faces that I'm sure I will know when I see, but I can't really picture it having seen him in anything.
No, I saw the picture. It sounded like maybe he'd been in lots of other things, but I don't think I've watched any of those, to be honest.
No, I think I've seen The Boat That Rocked, but I don't think I've seen any of the others. Gwendolyn Christie is playing Lucifer. Now, technically, the same version of Lucifer that is in the TV show Lucifer. That's where the same character comes from, but these are going to be wildly different. So Gwendolyn Christie is playing this version of Lucifer, obviously the ruler of hell, probably best known as being Brienne of Tarth in Game of Thrones and playing Captain Phasma in the Star Wars movies. I think that's a really interesting choice for Lucifer. That'd be a role that I think I can see her doing quite well, I would have thought.
She's very good. I love that. Actually, I saw that. That was the first picture that I saw. And right. I was like, I really like what she's done. I think she's going to be really, really good.
Vivian Chimpong, I think is how you pronounce her name, is playing Lucien, chief librarian and trusty guardian of Dream's realm. She's from things like Famalan, and she's also popped up in episodes of Death in Paradise, Doctors, Holby City, pretty much sort of the most things that jobbing British actors end up popping up in. Boyd Holbrook is playing the Corinthian, an escaped nightmare who wishes to taste all that the world has in store. You'll know Boyd from Narcos. He also was in the Quibi series The Fugitive as well. He's appeared in things like Logan and Gone Girl and The Predator in terms of movies and stuff, but he's a great actor, so I'm glad he's in there. Charles Dance is playing Roderick Burgess, a charlatan, blackmailer and magician. Obviously everybody I think knows who Charles Dance is, but yep. Of course Tywin Lannister from Game of Thrones most recently, I think. And Asin Chowdhury is set to play Abel, and Sanjeev Bhaskar is set to play Kane. You all know those as the first victim and the first predator, residents and loyal subject in Dream's realm. Asim Chowdhury, probably best known for People Just Do Nothing, and Sanjeev Bhaskar, Kumar's Gracious Gracious Me, Sandylands, Unforgotten, a whole bunch of other things as well. Yeah, great bit of casting, I think, in this really interesting cast they've got set up for that, I think. The series obviously is based on the Sandman comic books. Gaiman is exec producer and co-writer on it. David S. Goyer, who did things like Batman Begins, Dark Knight, the new Foundation series, is co-writing as well, and is showrunner on it. So they're a solid team, and, you know, people that don't know what they're doing. Obviously, I mean, it's Gaiman's property and Goya has oodles of experience dealing with DC properties. So there's solid people behind it. I'm very interested in that series. I think it's going to be fascinating. On to more casting and more DC stuff. Titans season 3 has added another character. They've added another Robin. Jay LeCourgo has been cast as Tim Drake, probably best known from being in I May Destroy You. You saw I May Destroy You. Do you remember who he is? Because I don't know whether he's a big character, a small character, or what.
He's not a character that I remember. I will look it up now, though. But my general opinion on this is they took so long to embed the multiple characters they introduced into season 2.
Yeah.
Now we're going to have to go through that again and embed more new characters. I mean, this is a Robin. He's going to have a lot to embed. So, he's not that character I remember from I May Destroy You. He doesn't look too familiar either. So I think this is his first major role.
Yeah. He has popped up in Doctors as well because, you know, he's British. And it's a rule when you're a British actor that you have to pop up in.
Doctors is the modern day Bill, isn't it?
Yeah.
The Bill.
Yeah. Doctors, EastEnders, Holby City, you pop up in one of those. If you know the character of Tim Drake, they've slightly altered the background for the TV show. He's described as a streetwise kid who's managed to grow up on the toughest streets without losing his belief in heroism. He's an easygoing demeanor. He's backed up by a near genius mind, natural detective with a perception and details far beyond his years, which is very much like the comic book character. The kind of streetwise kid background thing is somewhat different. He isn't a tough street kid in the comic books. He's somebody who's been following Batman and Robin for many years. He figures out who Nightwing is, and Nightwing was Dick Grayson, and he figures out who Batman is and tries to convince, you know, Batman appears to be in trouble, and he tries to convince Dick to go and help Batman as Robin because he's convinced that Batman needs that sidekick, that Robin sidekick, and Dick refuses to go back into the Robin costume. Understandably, I think. This will be the third Robin on the show, of course, because they've introduced them all fairly quickly because Curran Walters, who played Jason Todd, which was Robin number 2, who is still in it, but he's going to be Red Hood. They'd already announced that. They're switching from him being Robin to him being his Red Hood persona after the events of season 2. Dick, who is of course now Nightwing, and now you're going to have Jay, who is going to be playing Tim Drake, who I have to say is my favourite of the Robin characters. I'm just not entirely convinced that this was totally necessary at this point. We've also got Barbara Gordon joining this season as well, who is taking over as Gotham's police commissioner. Still has a past relationship with Dick, which is the same as the comic books. She has been police commissioner in the comic books previously as well, so there is some sort of connection there. And we're also going to have a yet to be cast Jonathan Crane, aka Scarecrow, in this as well, which he offers his services as profiler and consultant for JCPD, which somewhat sounds like the role that Riddler had in the Gotham TV series. Plus you've got all the returning characters: Raven, Wonder Girl, Superboy, Hawk and Dove, Beast Boy. You know,
it's more like an episode of EastEnders, the number of characters they've got.
Yeah, it is ridiculous. It is getting slightly ludicrous. You've also got Starfire's sister Blackfire in there as well. He's coming back. She's going to be the villain. So the amount of characters is getting slightly ludicrous at this point. And we already were saying, oh God, I hope they don't add more because there's too many characters and it was a mess that second season. I don't know. Maybe being in Gotham will ground them a bit more. Maybe they'll chop some of the characters out. I mean, I think you could remove Hawk and Dove out of that and not bring them back in quite easily and it would still work perfectly well.
Hasn't Hawk got another job? Hasn't Alan Richardson? I'm sure we've talked about it on here.
Yes, he's got another job. Alan Richardson is Jack Reacher for Amazon. That's his new job. So it's quite possible that, I mean, it's been listed that Hawk and Dove are going to be in it, but it's quite possible they won't be. So that would cut down a couple of characters, which would be useful. There's a lot of people in this. We'll have to see whether this is necessary or not. As I say, I like Tim Drake as Robin. I love Red Hood as well as a character. I think Red Hood's fantastic, but I like him as Red Hood rather than Jason Todd as Robin. I love Tim Drake as Robin, but I just don't know whether this is necessary at this point. You're almost at a stage where you could have a Titan series and a Teen Titan series. You could have like a second series which is focused on the younger members and a series which is focused on the older members. Yeah, if you see what I mean.
It's just too much. I'm really worried that I won't get into this one.
We'll see. We'll see where it goes. And lastly, they have announced something which I'm massively looking forward to, and I really hope this goes to series, a Buck Rogers TV reboot, which is, it's been screaming that it's the sort of thing that I'm surprised nobody's tried yet. It's in the works from George Clooney and Brian K. Vaughan, which I think are two great people to have involved backing it. Clooney, alongside his co-founder of his production company, Smokehouse, are going to be the production company behind it. The person writing it is Brian K. Vaughan. If you're not aware of Buck Rogers, because you're not old enough, original series, it was created by Battlestar Galactica's Glenn A. Larson. It ran from 79 to 81, starred Gil Gerard in the title role. The story follows Captain William Anthony Buck Rogers, who is a pilot who accidentally is frozen in time for 500 years when the life support on his spacecraft malfunctions. When he wakes up, he finds himself in a world that's been rebuilt following a nuclear war and is now under the protection of something called the Earth Defense Directorate. As he has no personal connections or records, he finds that his position and unique ancient skill set and way of looking at things places him perfectly to help out the Earth Defense with covert missions and undercover ops. He has help in these endeavors by Colonel Wilma Deering, who was his on-off love interest, and a little robot sidekick called Tweaky, who was actually voiced by Bugs Bunny's Mel Blanc and probably best remembered for having this unique noise which would biddy biddy biddy. It was such a wonderfully fun series. I really, really enjoyed it. It was written as a novella by a guy called Philip Francis Nolan. It was first published in Amazing Stories and very much has that sort of classic, old school kind of Amazing Stories sci-fi feel to it. It was a film series back in the 1930s, 40s, and then the TV series as well. And it was a comic strip and all sorts of other things. No casting or anything like that for it at the moment. There were rumours originally that Clooney might take the title role, which I thought was a bit odd given that it's a series and this could be an ongoing series, and I didn't think that would be the sort of thing that Clooney would agree to. But it sounds like his agent has come out since and said no, he's only attached as producer right now, although that doesn't mean he won't pop up in it at some point. The script is coming from Brian K. Vaughan, who is a name that you might know because he's the person that wrote Why the Last Man, which is currently being made into a TV series for FX, Paper Girls, which is currently being made into a TV series for Amazon, Marvel's Runaways, which was adapted for Hulu. He also wrote the amazing and multi-award winning comic book Saga, which if you've ever read that book is probably unfilmable as a TV thing, but I would love to see somebody have a go at it because it's incredible. His TV writing credits including things like Lost. He did many, many seasons of Lost. He also created the series Under the Dome based on the Stephen King novel as well. He's a phenomenal, phenomenal writer, and this is perfect for him. He does this kind of weird, slightly off the wall, post-dystopian thing very, very, very well. So I'm really interested to see what he comes up with. Do you know the original Buck Rogers, or had this bypassed you by that?
I'm just too young. I'm just too sprightly and young.
I thought you might be. Yeah, because I don't know whether it's actually got shown repeated that often either, which is a great shame because I have such fond memories of that show. And it was one of the first things I would have watched as sci-fi. I mean, like I say, 82, 83, it probably aired over here. So I would have been 7 or 8 at the time. Probably one of the earliest sci-fis I ever watched. And I just loved it. I thought it was just wonderfully funny and fun. So that is in the works at the moment. No channel attached or anything. It's in development. Might not go to series, but I mean, given the people that are involved with this, I think somebody will probably pick it up, but we'll have to wait and see. That will be one to look out for. We'll let you know if that goes any further. So that's all the news we've got for this week. Let's move on to some highlights for next week on TV. Highlights for next week. We have Private Eyes, which is returning for its fourth season on Sky Witness. Season 1 to 3 originally ran on the Universal Channel. They are up on Sky and Air TV right now. That's coming on the 4th of February at 9 p.m. for season 4, which is the first time that's been shown in the UK. I haven't started watching any of this yet, but I'm told it's very much a sort of dramedy, sort of in the vein of something like Castle and those sort of shows. If you want to go and watch that sort of thing, it stars Jason Priestley. It looks like it could be quite good, but I haven't actually tried watching it, but people say it's very good. 000, which we've talked about a few times, it's from the producers of Gomorrah. It's a sort of international drugs drama. It's based on the Robert Severo novel about this sort of drug trafficking trade. It looks like it could be really interesting. That's coming to Sky Atlantic on the 4th of February at 9 p.m. as well. Those Who Kill coming to Fox on the 4th of February at 10 p.m. This was another one of their big box one season shows. Starred James Darcy, who you'll probably know from Agent Carter, and Chloe Savini. She's a recently promoted homicide detective who tracks down a vicious serial killer and endless attempts to reveal the truth behind her brother's disappearance with the aid of the college professor, which is James Darcy's character. So yeah, ran for one season, but it's there if you want to go and watch it. That's called Those Who Kill, 4th of February at 10 o'clock. And Rami, which is the comedy drama which follows first generation Egyptian American who is on his spiritual journey in his politically divided New Jersey neighborhood. That's previously ran on Stars Play in the UK. That's coming to Channel 4 on the 5th of February at 11:05 in the evening, because why would you premiere something early? And then we have The Disappearance, which is a Canadian miniseries that's coming to Five Star on the 6th of February at 9 p.m. While participating in a birthday treasure hunt, 10-year-old Anthony Sullivan suddenly disappears. The investigation that follows uncovers many secrets buried by his family long ago. So that's only a miniseries, but if you like those sort of little crime dramas, that could be one to watch. And Soulmates, which is an interesting sounding new show coming to Amazon Prime on the 8th of February. It's an anthology series set approximately 15 years in the future when a company has developed a test that can determine the person you were most meant to love with 100% accuracy. It's got a bit sort of Black Mirror-y sounding to it, that one. And I think it could be quite interesting, but it's an anthology series called Soulmates coming to Amazon Prime on the 8th of February. And that's everything for this week. We're starting to get things come back.
That was a long episode today. That's for all our It's a Sin discussions.
Yes. Yeah. If people do want to carry on those It's a Sin discussions, where can they find you?
Please come over to Twitter at GreyTheGeek and do have a chat about what's going on. Absolutely. We'll happily chat and share.
Yes. Grey with an A as well, isn't it?
Yes. Yes. Grey with an A.
Grey with an A. For other people, you can, of course, go and find Bex over on twitch.tv at Trista Bytes. That's B-Y-T-E-S. Streaming daily, lots of fun geeky chatter and all that sort of stuff. That's over on Twitch. Matt, you can find over on entertainmenttalk.org for lots and lots more podcasts going out daily over there. Daryl, you can now find at his new home over at hollywoodnorthnews.net for all those TV series that you love that are shot in Canada, which is basically every superhero sci-fi series out there right now, where he's covering all that sort of stuff over on hollywoodnorthnews.net. Go and find him on there and go and follow him online. And for us, you can go to geektown.co.uk throughout the week and see all the latest air date information. If you want to get in touch with your questions or comments, email us on podcast@geektown.co.uk. Leave a message on the website post. Find us at Geektown on Twitter, on Facebook at facebook.com/geektown, on YouTube at youtube.com/geektown, and on Instagram at geektownuk. That is everything. We shall see you next week. Bye bye.
Bye.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.